I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let go. You're rolling with J&J, 92.9 FM, ESPN on a Tuesday. I'm happy because we're full staff now. We are at full strength. My brother's back, John Martin. We've got a lot to discuss about last night, about the Tigers win on Saturday. Got to talk to my partner about that big win over South Florida, obviously. So we'll be playing a little bit of catch-up now that John is back. Again, a blessing to have him back. Welcome home back to Memphis. It sounded like you were all over the country. We'll get a chance to hear about it. He expected my monologue to go a little longer. So while he's looking in his backpack, I will. What a night last night. Long game three of the World Series, 6 hours, 39 minutes, ends up with another walk-off by Freddie Freeman. That's what he does. Dodgers up. My dad's up in heaven happy. You had Grizzlies. I'll tell you what, first half, it looked good. Feeling real good. Second half, it was Draymond Green and doing Warriors doing what they usually do to you. They get the win 131-118. I'll take 2-2 through the first four, though. Next one is Phoenix. You had Tigers basketball out there last night. We all got our first look. Those that didn't see him for the Ballin' on Beal Festival, we saw him against real competition. And a top 15 team against Arkansas, real interested to hear my partner's take from last night. Sounds like you were watching. I know from the texts that you were. And then we had after a first half, you're wondering, was Casey, okay, this offense sputtering a little bit. They've been high octane. They did it in the second half. The 7-7 first half, they end up rolling Washington, 28-7, of course, Washington playing with Mariota. We move on. Bears coming off a loss. John's back. Brad Carson's here on the ones and twos, executive producer slash boss, program director number one in the country. We are whole.
We back. It was a good weekend. Was in Martinsville, Virginia, of all places. Was checking out some NASCAR. My brother-in-law's a big NASCAR fan, and I told him I'd come with him and support him on that journey. It was an experience. There's no question about that. You know, it was nothing I've ever thought about doing. It was never a scene I planned on crashing, and I did it. And you know, I can always say I did it.
That's good.
So good. It was life a experience. You know, it was a big. You know, I don't know how many NASCAR fans there are in Memphis, but it was a fairly significant race. It was like a, you know, playoff race, I think. And then they finished the season next week in Phoenix. So second to last race of the season, they narrowed it down from 8 to 4. William Byron, your winner on Sunday in Martinsville. So there you go.
Thank you.
The more you know, man. The more you know.
How many people were there?
It feels bigger than it is. It was only like 40,000, 45,000.
Okay. It's not every day that you're.
Yeah.
Unless you're in an SEC football game or Power.
Which I did that. That was the experience.
I heard you changed. It was homecoming week for the Tigers. And I told these people, you had a whole different college football team this week.
I sure did. Mm-hmm. I sure did. I went up to, because, you know, Martinsville is where the race was, but we stayed in Roanoke, Virginia, because you can't stay in Martinsville. That's like a podunk little town, right?
Okay.
So you drive an hour up. But, you know, 30 minutes away from Roanoke is Blacksburg, Virginia, which is where Virginia Tech is. And, buddy, you want to talk about an eye-opener. You want to talk about an awakening experience. That's what it was. And it wasn't even just about the football, right? It wasn't even just about the football.
I already know.
That was Cal versus Virginia Tech, two, you know, rough teams, mm-hmm. generally speaking.
You went for one reason only.
And what was that?
To do Enter Sandman.
I did. I did that and to avenge Fuente.
Okay.
To make sure that they knew that y'all did my man wrong.
I'm sure you texted him from there.
I did. I let him know. I let him know that I was in your former hood, and I'll do whatever you need me to do, Coach. You know,
you got had on a Fuente jersey.
I should have.
See how that turned out for you weekend.
They, you know, what's amazing is that I was talking to people there. They still hold Brad Cornelison's name. It's like a curse word. The OC.
Oh.
Like, yeah. I was like, so what happened with the Fuente era? Like, why were you, like from where I was in Memphis, it felt pretty good. And they're like, the OC, man. He just wouldn't fire him. You know, I'm like, who was it? Cornell. They remember his name and everything, bro. I mean, it was quite the experience. But what I would say is the campus, bro. The campus of Virginia Tech was like, I was like, damn, man. I was like, think about all the life decisions I made in my, you know, like.
Okay.
I mean, I'm telling you.
Well, I mean, I'm sure it's that way at a lot of campuses if you're comparing it to our experience.
Well, that's probably true.
But it's
true.
A much different experience at Memphis now than it was in our day.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's like if you go to Virginia Tech, you get the real campus experience because everything is there.
Absolutely.
You get the game. You get the basketball arena.
It's college town.
And then you get the downtown all within like 5 minutes of each other, right? So that's like that's the thing that's very, very different about, you know, and you're right. It's probably not fair to compare. It's more fair to compare Memphis to like Louisville to, you know, South Florida.
Yeah, at one point, we were straight commuter. I mean, we were Tiger High. You go on campus to get off.
But, man, you can actually see the leaves changing colors up there. That's the other thing. It's like it's just a beautiful, scenic environment. So, and then, the inner the Sandman thing was just they stopped the music. The crowd sings it. It's pretty amazing.
Play the Tiger fight song for this man so real quick just so he remembers where he's from.
I'm just saying, man. There's a whole world out there.
I'm just making sure you remember where you're from as you go off into this world every weekend.
That's right.
Going to your NASCAR and your VT games.
Well, I mean, look, we went to one of their Podunk sports bars on Saturday,
mm-hmm.
and we had the main TV and sound on the Memphis game.
Well, thank goodness.
While the Virginia game was happening, there were people in that bar that were flabbergasted as to why Memphis was on the main TV with the sound.
Did they stay for the fourth quarter?
They stayed for all. They stayed for it all, 100%. Because that Virginia game was actually, I think it went to overtime with North Carolina. It was very dramatic. Yep. And these Virginians are having to watch it on the small TV because we got there early.
Well, you stood up for us. All right.
So I do want people to know that as I was enjoying the Virginia Tech beautiful campus, that I was still repping Memphis at this All Sports Cafe is what it was called. And they were confused as well, but that's fine. We got what we wanted. We got there early, and they were nice to accommodate us. But I figured you packed that up, man. I figured you put that in a nice tidy box yesterday. And
well, there's no way we're not gonna off to a win like that. It's not even arguable. It's Ryan Serfield's biggest win.
Yeah.
Tulane was 17, South Florida's 18, but it's not close.
Right, in terms of context of the season.
What's at stake still?
Yes.
I mean, I figured we'd have to get you to chime in on it. It's too big a win not to. So, yes, I packaged it up as well as I could. Much of it about that fourth quarter, staying together, all that good stuff.
Well, look.
Great win, but back still against the wall was the bottom line.
That's right, and that's exactly right. I do want you to know that trip to Virginia was not all for naught. We're going to be joined by Justin Fuente later this week.
Excellent.
And of course, he.
Which one's he doing now? He's now with the committee, right? He's out of the media doing the committee.
Is he out of the media? I guess he has to be.
Yeah, I remember hearing him say he would he was transitioning out, in a few weeks.
Oh, that was.
Or I thought that was. I thought I heard him say
he joined the radio team.
Or maybe
just
someone else
just
explained
it. Yeah.
But that he's not going to be able to do, you know, put in each one.
Well, that makes sense.
Sound like,
because obviously, you know, he would be biased if he's doing, you know.
Yeah.
Advising.
I mean, it's a consulting job with the committee, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you're going to be out and about.
If it's close, you know, and then TCU's like on the fringe, like, well, isn't Justin Fuente a color commentator or analyst for the TCU football program? Yeah. So, anyway, yeah, a lot to get to on the show today. Jessica Benson's going to join us at 11:25. Grizzlies, unfortunately, go down last night on the road at Golden State. Was probably always going to happen.
I expected it.
But we will get into all of that with her. You know, look, at what point do you wonder, like, with what you're getting from Coward, like, when does that move happen? Because it does feel inevitable. It feels inevitable. I mean, I guess you can give it time. It's four games into the season. But, you know, how do you evaluate that game to game? Because he's obviously – that game against the Pacers was just fantastic.
It was.
That was, like, exactly what you ever could hope for.
Yeah, he showed you the ceiling. For anybody that was concerned about him,
and
look at the way he shot the ball. He's 6-6.
That's what we were waiting on. It's like, if the shot comes?
And to his credit, he never lost his confidence, even when some of us did. And whether or not he could do it, he stayed confident, kept shooting the ball,
yep.
And you produce a night like that,
yep.
That shows you, well, maybe this guy is special in the sense of what he can be in this rotation going forward.
Absolutely. So we'll talk to Jessica about all of that at 11:25. Then at 1:25, Frank Bonner's going to be in here in studio.
Good.
We'll be recapping, obviously, the big win over South Florida
with him at 1:25.
Yeah, Golish had some things to say. We want, you know, you and I haven't talked about, obviously, about Memphis fans. We had to talk about that with Bonner, all that good stuff. And then what's ahead? Got a weird Friday game.
Yes.
That's Rice.
Yes, Rice. Big favorite, 14-point favorite, right? So you should handle it, but we've been down that road before.
It was way more handleable.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a word.
Yeah. No question. So we'll get into all that with Frank Bonner at 1:25. So that is the show today. There was the exhibition last night, and then, you know, my statement officially on the South Florida win. Obviously, I agree with what you said. It was the biggest win in the tenure of Ryan Silverfield. I don't know how it happened, quite honestly.
Unbelievable fourth quarter.
Yeah. It was when they went up 31-17, it felt like curtains.
Third. Had all the momentum.
You know, there were some, I thought, critical mistakes from both coaches in this game. One ended up being more costly than the other. And I'm talking about Golish's decision to go for it on 4th-and-4 instead of going up 10. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what the score was at that time. Maybe 21-14. He could have gone up 4. Gone up 10 with a field goal.
Two scores.
Right, which would have made the difference at the end of the game, most likely, for South Florida. But at the end of the day, you know, Memphis still has to do that. You know, we could say Golish left the door open, and he did, but that team still has to go out there and bust in. And I will say, like, it's the same thing that we kind of said about this team after Arkansas, which was a similar comeback, right? Like, this team has resolve. You know, when they're down, they respond. Now, they didn't against UAB. Why? I guess it was a
They tried.
Freaky quarterback situation. Right, you know. Right.
I mean, AJ comes back and has that in him. They came back. The opportunity was there right at the 1 yard line, to be honest.
No, you're right. It was a yard away from completing a 14-point comeback in 4 minutes.
That's the point. One of my point. I mean, if Ryan Silverfield has a strength, it's keeping his teams together, whether
it's in game
or it's in a season.
Yeah.
Even last year after UTSA, they come back, beat Tulane later. It doesn't matter, it should.
Yeah.
But they beat a number 17 Tulane team.
No, I think that's spot
on.
Strength. I mean, he does do a fantastic job of keeping everybody engaged and not letting go of the rope. And
clearly,
and it's been a strength of his, you know, in his time. Now the weakness has been being put in a situation where you have to keep the team engaged, right?
Yeah, when you're a front runner.
Yes.
I mean that's what they were at preseason number one last year.
Right.
And it's what they were before the UAB loss.
Absolutely.
And in many ways, and I've heard a lot of this, and I'm interested to hear you. Many ways, see, ESPN put that number out after the game that their computers are spitting out. Memphis has got the best chance to be the group of five representative. But if you look at FanDuel, it's fourth best odds.
Yes.
In the American.
Yes.
You knew that already. That's
yes.
the thing. So it's
which
a little
I, which
bit,
I found
it's a little bit different
yeah.
than what the computers at ESPN are pumping
yes.
out. Now, of course, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that. Part of it is schedule. Part of it is what's in there in terms of for those other teams. You don't get to play everybody. I know in some ways,
right.
you know, I'm talking about those other Tulane doesn't play.
That's right.
What in this case, South Florida. They only face you.
That's right.
There's a chance, like we said, Tulane's only gonna have the one loss. You're still in that same position as the bottom line.
Now, you would much rather not be playing Tulane and Navy now.
Exactly.
Because you got the win over South Florida, which is the one you needed to get. You'd
the
rather have
win in the conference this year.
You would rather have the schedule that North Texas has.
I think the ESPN computers are factoring, okay, those two tough ones are at home.
And
Tulane, and that's why Memphis is back. You know, it's not by much this time around like it felt like that before the UAB loss.
Yep.
But that's what they're factoring in. FanDuel's looking at everything. They're looking at the schedules for these other teams. And you're fourth best odds, I think.
Well, yeah. And to be clear, you know, does that come back against South Florida happen in Tampa? You know, I don't know.
Tulane's one at plus 230.
And then North Texas is second, right?
South Florida's plus 300, and this is FanDuel.
Okay.
North Texas plus 350, Memphis plus 400.
Yeah. Yeah, so a little bit of a shift there. But it's crazy that
you
beat South Florida and they're still ahead of you, despite you guys both have one loss.
I think the advantage is you control your own destiny.
That's exactly
That's
right.
That's what this doesn't necessarily suggest, the FanDuel odds, is that you control your destiny. You got these teams at your house. You win, you're in.
Well, I think what it is pricing in is that they expect Memphis to lose a game, right? They have the toughest path because they have to play the conference favorite right now in Tulane. Now,
Undefeated Navy team that won't be, I don't think, undefeated by that time.
Right.
But right now they're playing well.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing. It's like those games are just going to be absolutely, gigantic in terms of, you know, both teams being really good.
Well, what it's kept it, what Saturday's
win did was kept them mattering.
Yes,
in a way that they would not have.
Season would have been over.
Had you lost the game, the season was over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's the take. It's like, listen, obviously, you know, Memphis, it took everything to beat South Florida. And, you know, who knows how those games are going to play out against Tulane. And
that fourth quarter defense, man.
Yeah.
Punt, miss, field goal was huge.
Yes.
Their defense stepping up, get those stops. After the performance against UAB, it's almost like, good Lord. And that's what I said to Brad. It's like you saw that team in a lot of ways be just as physical as South Florida, out make plays, whatever, down the stretch. That looked like the best team in the American on Saturday. And that's what made, you know, you said this is a team that should be playing for a championship. That's what you come away thinking.
Agreed.
And unfortunately, it leaves you thinking, how in the world you lose the UAB game? You should be undefeated at this point. You should be. You're that good a team. Is what Saturday proved.
Absolutely right.
Talent-wise, fight-wise, everything else. You know, all the players kept saying afterwards they were angry.
Yep.
You know, Ryan, I don't know if he's using the media. Hey, everybody's counting us out, whatever it is. It's always that us against the world. It seems to be when he's holding them together.
Yep.
Need him to play angry against Rice, angry against Tulane, play that way the rest of the season. That's been sort of the thing that's been missing is keeping that the entire season for Ryan.
No, there's no.
It'll get you in a conference championship game.
There's no question about that. So, yeah, I kept the season alive, and we have interest. We have interest in the rest of the season. And
huge.
You know, I think we were going to – I mean, Brenton Lewis played. That's the other thing. I mean, what an absolute beast.
Went through for over 300 yards, dude. He did it in a way that nobody expected him
what
to
What a beast.
It. Yeah. I mean, he went toe-to-toe with Brown, who, I'm telling you, had this date circled. He hadn't played him in 2 years when he lost in a shootout to him 2 years ago. Sat out last year, hurt. They scored 3 points. Byron been waiting on this game. Do you see that play where he jumping over a Memphis defender? And to stop him, to hold them to 7 points in the second half?
Yep.
Incredible defense. But back to your point, Brenton Lewis outplayed him in many ways. I know he didn't have the 100-something rushing yards.
Yep.
But, bro, he made the throws. And Cortez, whoo! What an addition. What a late addition. We said it when it happened. That's why I get excited thinking about Cortez, who I think has 7 touchdowns now.
Yes.
Which is right up there among the AAC leaders.
Yes. It was honestly a fantastic game, a fantastic win. And again, you know.
We moved to Rice on Friday. Yeah.
Yes. Right. Probably not going to have enough time to talk about the exhibition here before we get to Jessica Benson because it's already 11:18. So obviously a lot of thoughts on that game last night. Great scene. I mean, time is a bitch. I will tell you that because I'm looking at that lineup of Tigers, and I'm like, damn. I remember when them dudes were like 17, 18, 19, and now they're like, you know, they're getting to be old men, which means so am I.
Welcome to getting older, man.
It's tough, man. It's tough. But it was a great scene last night, man, seeing all those guys down there. And, you know, obviously I know there were some guys who couldn't make it that we wanted to see, but – you know, just seeing that long line of guys that wore that uniform and just the whole thing. Crowd looked great.
Yeah, bottom half was full, so it looked great there. Yes. It looked great on television.
I'm happy if we just blew off the whole entire roof of FedEx Forum, just cut out all those seats.
Well, I mean, included in the renovations.
Yeah. I think they are reducing those, aren't they? Isn't that part of the thing?
I think that's the general idea is that you have too many seats up top.
They totally do.
Too few down low.
That's right. So if we invert it. Because more people would rather be low than high. That's just, you know,
you want to sell more good seats.
That's exactly right. And you probably will sell more good seats than bad, would be my guess. Anyway, we'll talk to Jessica Benson about the Grizzlies last night. Probably touch on Saturday as well. Cedric Coward's, you know, performance against the Pacers.
Have to.
Get into all of that and more on the other side. J&J, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Jessica Benson is the Grizzophile. Catch her on the Jessica Benson Show with CJ Hurt every day on Grind City Media, Grizz Radio Network, and she joins us now. I tell you what, man, those Tuesday 9 p.m.s, and you got to get up a lot earlier than I do. And then, you know, you're an 8.5-point dog. What's your strategy on those games? Do you, like, just have, like, a couple of tweets scheduled? Oh, tough game, you know? Like, what's the old strategy there for JB?
Well, so a part of my game watching experience is me and our wonderful social media guru, we're cutting highlights during the game as well because I do game winning highlights on my show, but I only do them after wins. And so I'm laying highlights down on a premiere editing timeline and we're keeping up with them. And I will just have a feeling sometimes that something's not going to go well. And I kid you not, that Draymond Green incident happened. I closed my laptop. I watched the rest of the third quarter in bed, And then I closed my little eyes at the start of fourth quarter and said, I'll watch the final quarter when I wake up in the morning as I'm getting ready, because I feel like I know how this one's about to go.
Right, and you missed the heartwarming moment there at the end of the game between the Spencer brothers.
How could
I? Yeah, I related very much to that moment. There was nothing I would love to do more than post my little brother's BS up, you know, put one on him as the clock expires. He tried it. But it was not to be. Yeah, it was a I don't know if I could say scheduled loss, but you know, I my hopes weren't incredibly high for the. I mean, they're, you know, let us not forget that they are not healthy. And these Warriors, you know, they're old, but they're feisty. I mean, that's kind of the lesson. We'll see if it persists over the course of the season. But you know, it does feel like with Kuminga now and that starting lineup, like they maybe have unlocked a new element to what they do.
Yeah, I think for them, and obviously in my household, I have to watch a lot of Warriors basketball. They're a really good defensive team so far early this year. And then if you're able to get the Kuminga production along with someone like a Pajemski, or then last night, I mean, you had Moody just nailing threes off the bench. And it gets to a point where even when Draymond Green ultimately fouls out of the game, you know, you're able to level off without him. And you have players like a Draymond and a Al Horford who didn't play last night. Like, those are players who really emerge in, I know we get Draymond antics all season long, but they're playoff players, right? Like, they're team builders in the playoffs, especially Horford and everything that he did with the Celtics for all those years. But they have a lot of different ways that they can weather periods of time maybe without some of their older players and don't have to put as much run on those legs. And a game like last night, like, Steph was fine, but by no means was Steph Curry the reason the Warriors ultimately beat the Grizzlies for a 7,000th time.
The Draymond thing, we've seen it so many times. I want to say just that I'm disappointed in our response, right? Whether it's Santi Aldama, you missed the free throws, whatever. And we can say how frustrated we are with the way the refs, you know, Draymond doing the stuff he did in the lane should have been a tech, right? But and I, you know, I want to look at this and say, well, this response, we've been through this before. We should know better, right? We should respond better. That said, it's a different roster. Yeah, it's similar up at the top with John Jaren, but the rest of these guys are new. And so, John said, you just kind of circle this as a loss. I don't know. Should we have expected a better response when that kind of stuff happens, when they go into antics mode and it works on us in the way that it did?
You have to. Like, I, Jessica Benson, known pacifist, known hoper of world peace, like, I am not the person who sits here and says fight, but at some point you have to do something or it's just going to keep happening. Like, you know, Draymond Green lives for those moments, and he especially seems to live for those moments against the Grizzlies because he's identified them, and I hate to say it, but as soft, as he said it himself, and he called it a soft call, but I felt like that was almost more indicative of him knowing the situation that he was starting, the pot that he was stirring, and he was basically daring somebody. He was daring Jaren to say something by telling him to just shut up over it. He wasn't actually telling you to shut up. He was telling you to fight, and everyone backed off, and, I mean, the hottest anyone got was Tomas Isola, who gets teed up, it was one of those things where you just know. Like, Draymond Green skipping around, which he absolutely should have gotten a tech for that too, but I digress. But him skipping around was just him owning that moment again. And this team has, I understand that we've seen some, you know, positive finishes against the Warriors since the playoff series a few years back, but you've lost 13 of 15 in that building now of your last 15 games there. Like, they own you. And it's the crowd. It's the Draymond. It's Steph. It's Steve Kerr. It's the cloud of the Warriors. And you had a real opportunity to kind of make a statement. We're not going to take it anymore. And maybe it's just as much as Zach Edey not being out on the court last night, and maybe he changes that. But I thought my wonderful co-host, CJ Hurt, brought up on the show this morning too, it's not just about Draymond. Like, you've had players, whether it be Jalen Wells last year in the Hornets game or Ja in the playoffs with the Thunder, on breakaways getting taken out by really scary plays and gotten hurt, like really, really hurt. And at some point you have to say enough is enough, whether it be Draymond or any other player who tries to make a dirty play on a Grizzlies player. That's that fair. This isn't going
to
stand.
Remember he did it to Brandon Clark. Remember that when he pulled him down by the.
Yep.
No, you're exactly right. You got to stand up at some point.
It was hard to watch. It was hard
to
watch.
I have to watch it with a Warriors fan. It's the worst.
Well, it was just hard to watch Draymond.
It's just like Rodman.
Look at Ed Jaren in the face and say, shut up. Shut up.
Crazy.
And then Jaren basically cooperate. Yeah,
there's too much.
I mean, I guess
too much respect.
Yeah, it's like, come on, man. Like Jared, he
little brothers them all the time.
Yeah, Jared's not that guy. Like, you know, and it's so you can't really ask him to change. But you know, I don't know. I thought like maybe a guy like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope would have been. We talked about this like in the first week of the season. Like, who's that? Where's that toughness?
Well, that works with Poole, but it's not necessarily going to work with Golden State, like a group of champions. Like,
no, it's true. Right? I mean, and there's levels to it.
Poole got punched in the face.
Now, in fairness, there's like nobody that I think would come even close to Dylan. I mean, to Draymond in the league.
Yeah.
That matters. Well, in
what
the context.
He gets away with is unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, he's sitting there skipping after Santi misses the,
crazy.
But,
and it's also like, I understand it's probably not a popular take, and maybe it's because I sit in this like house divided, but he's also one of the funniest players. I don't want him to hurt anyone because I genuinely think he does dirty things that can lead to serious injuries. But also when he's skipping, like, I'm laughing. I'm like, who is this guy? Like, this clown.
No,
how is this possible?
I'm glad you said that because it is a dying breed in the NBA.
I don't think we'll ever have another one.
Because there is no doubt that when he sees the Grizzlies, he turns it up. The decibel levels for him go up. Like, he just, and I don't know if it's because there's such a history between these two teams. Is it because he almost was a Grizzly? Is it because he's gotten ejected from Grizzlies? I don't know. But when he sees the Memphis Grizzlies, he's even in that damn Kia commercial. He says, watch out for the Grizzlies.
I forgot about the Grizzlies.
You know, like, that ain't no coincidence, man. I'm sure he wanted to put that line in there. He wanted to be the one that said it. I appreciate that he's a guy who, when he sees certain teams, that's what made the NBA great in the 90s, right? We go back and forth about this. It's like there were rivalries, like when the Knicks and the Bulls and et cetera. Like when certain teams got together, it was heated. And all we're asking is that the Grizz punch back a little bit, man. 13 of 15.
Don't let them punk you.
Punch back a little bit. You know, so.
Yeah.
I mean, like Cam Spencer would probably be like, guy, go in there and punch him in the groin. That's your role. You know, go do it, man. Yeah. We're fine. But that's not easy to come by. All right. So last night was a true bummer. You wish that one went a different way. Saturday, however, was a thing of beauty. And I was at some race on Saturday night, but I had the game on my phone. I was really watching the game. And, obviously it felt like a star was born. Cedric Coward, 6 of 6 from three. That's the one thing we've gotten a lot from him. The one thing we haven't gotten is the 3-point shooting. How crazy should we be going about this young man right now?
I was going pretty crazy. And listen, like, is he going to go 6 of 6 from three? Is he going to keep up these shooting percentages? Probably not. But that's okay, because if the entirety, when I say if Saturday represents his floor, I don't mean 27.6 of 6 from three. I mean from a sense of, oh, he's ready to belong now and has the capability of putting together a wild game like Saturday, but just the consistency levels that we've seen in his development, I think, is really promising. At the end of the day, this is a guy with a 7-foot wingspan, can defend every position, can efficiently score at all three levels. His shot is pure. I've been so impressed with his motor, with his just seemingly special mentals with all of it, how he handled the 27-point game on Saturday, not chasing for 30, trying to learn in real time. Obviously, he is someone who this team has a lot of hope on, but I don't think it's hyperbolic to say he is the biggest potential needle mover for this team. I mean, he could completely speed up an organization's timeline if he is ready now. And I don't want to put too much expectation on him, too. Like, he's going to be a rookie. He's going to have the ups and the downs, and there's a rookie wall for a reason, and that can be a difficult thing to overcome, but I do truly believe you were given a reason to see what the future could be with Cedric Coward over the weekend, and that's a pretty exciting place.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, and you kind of touched on it. It doesn't feel like there needs to be necessarily, or there should be an urgency to get him in there. Jalen Wells is nice to have. At least there's a floor with Jalen Wells. There's a good player in there that you trust that you can have ahead of him, whatever else, KCP, on the two. You've got guys ahead of them, so you don't have to rush it. But I guess my question, Jess, is what else do you need to see? How many games does it need to be before you're saying, I mean, this guy's playing like a starter. Let's go ahead and put him in there. What do you need to see?
Yeah.
What does Isolo need
to
see?
Yeah. Time.
Time.
Just time. Time and consistency. And if he continues to play at this level, they will be forced to put him in the starting lineup because it will be so abundantly clear that he is one of the best five options. And in the meantime, you start It's not how you start. It's how you finish. You can be in some closing lineups for this group, particularly if you have some closer games, and we'll see, you know, what Tomas Isolo rolls with in those situations. But I think it's just a matter of getting enough games under his belt, the consistency, the comfort levels there. And then also trying to figure out, you know, in a season that already is marred by lack of consistency in terms of lineup availability, in terms of having to remove Ty Jerome and Scottie Pippen Jr. from this thing early on. You knew what you were having with Edie and with Brandon Clark and the Vince Williams component. So, you know, you want some comfort, you want some chemistry to develop with these playing groups. And it would be a big change for a Jalen Wells to be out of the starting lineup. It would be a big thing for a veteran like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who was brought in for a reason to have to move out. So you have to navigate all of those extra things, certainly. But I think it's pretty clear if Cedric Coward plays to that level, he's going to force those uncomfortable conversations to be had.
Around the league, the Spurs have arrived. That's a problem. 4-0.
Yeah.
Wimby is inevitable. I mean, we knew we could see this coming, right? We it was on the Doppler radar. But I think that I think it's probably arrived a little earlier than we hoped. Is that fair to say? I mean, I thought like maybe like mid-season, but like now we know. The storm has arrived in the form of Victor Wembanyama and these Spurs. And I don't even think De'Aaron Fox is playing yet, right? This is scary.
No, he's not. It's scarier hours in San Antonio. I saw, it was Nike who has started calling him, and maybe this had already happened and I just missed it, but calling him the unguardable flying object, the UFO. And I'm like, that's so genius. Like between Victor Wembanyama and Shohei Ohtani, we are getting more and more proof that aliens walk amongst us. Like these people are not real. And Wemby has been incredible. That clip from the game against the Raptors last night, where he's bringing the ball up and he goes between his legs behind the back and then he just does it again in the most fluid way that someone his size is simply not supposed to be able to do. He's absurd, and the Spurs are very scary because of it.
Real quick, back to the Grizzlies. I do think one of the great things to come out of these first four is the fact that Ja has played in all of them. And we've heard him, and I know you've heard this too, Jess. He talked about it. Maybe it was Harrington that shot him the question. Like it sounded like maybe even a – And Josh said a lot of things, and a lot of times it's the right thing, and maybe necessarily doesn't happen. But it sounds like there's a want to, you know. Yeah, I know I need to play every game, and I want to play every game, and certainly 65 plus. I don't know. Do you come through the first four? Maybe it's some ankle braces. Maybe it's the way he's playing now. Do you come through the first four having, I don't know, higher hopes that 65 plus, and then you just put in law of averages. You know, you pray that the injury gods, all that stay away, that he goes over 65 and maybe well over it.
Right. And I mean, you see other teams and other players facing injury issues, like Anthony Edwards is out for a couple weeks. Yep. Everything that's happening with Luka Doncic right now and LeBron. And we just saw the Pacers. The Pacers are dead. So from the, you know, just how injuries naturally happen, more likely than not, he won't play all 82. But I do think there seems to be a real intentionality of Ja playing.
Yes.
And I always remind people, you know, in years past, it's not always his choice, right? Like there's a whole training team. There's a training staff that decides if someone is good to go. But perhaps, you know, more he's being more vocal. And even in his answers to Harrington, like, I want to play. I want to be out there going into the season. I want to hit X number of games. I want to be eligible for end of season awards. And I think that's really cool. I also just think from how he has talked to them, he is saying all the right things. And there does seem to be a notch up in the evolution of Ja as a leader. I've heard it in his post-game remarks, even something like last night, saying, I need to be better. I need to lead this team better. You've seen it in on-the-court coaching moments, whether it be with the rookies or even the communication levels between him and Jaren have been, I feel like, increased from years past. And I think all of that just makes Ja a more complete player, and it's a great thing to see and a really promising thing to see.
Talking to Jessica Benson from Grind City Media, Grizz Radio Network here on the show. All right, a couple college football things. I went to my first non-Memphis-involved college football game on Friday night. It was the vaunted Virginia Tech versus Cal game.
Wow.
It amazed. Like, that team was 2-5, okay? The Virginia Tech. They were 2-5. They were abysmal. They had fired their coach. They're on the interim, and they lost to Wake Forest by a billion points 2 weeks before that. And what amazed me is how many people still showed up. Like, is that a Virginia Tech thing? And I'm asking you as a college, like, is that a Virginia Tech thing Because I expected nobody to be there, quite frankly. Like, if Memphis was 2-5, like, it would be, there'd be 12 people at that game.
Yeah, I even, like, obviously different because I'm not trying to compare Virginia Tech to Arizona State, but it was, I think, not this past weekend, but the weekend before, where Arizona State had lost big in the whatever Big 12 game they had, I think, to Utah. They got crushed by Utah. And then they had a home game against seventh-ranked Texas Tech. And that environment was one of the craziest images coming out of 2 weekends ago in college football. And they won. And it was a huge upset. And just from a fan base that showed up despite having a disappointing start to the year, I like noted it as, oh, this is how it is in some places. And Virginia Tech is one of those. I went to USC. When we started losing, it was pretty sparse. Like, I don't think it's just a big market kind of thing or a big SEC, Big 10, ACC, Big 12 kind of deal. I think it just depends on the location. And obviously in, what is it, Blacksburg?
Yeah. Well, and you really get the feel. Like, that's what it looks like when your identity as a community truly lies with the college football team.
Yeah.
Like,
1,000%.
Like, you really feel the difference, you know. And I'm not saying that Memphis should be that, right? Like, Memphis is a real city. Like, it's not a college town, you know. It's not, I mean, there's people have jobs and careers and, you know, things like that. But that's the first time I've ever been to a game in, you know, a Power 4 college town. And I just was... I was blown away. I was like,
the only one I can really think of from a non-power standpoint that I remember, like, having grown up going to a lot of WAC games back in the day, RIP, but Boise is another example. Mm-hmm. Like, Boise State, good, bad, middle.
Yep.
The crowd was there and it was the thing to do. It was the place to be and you always wanted to be there.
Right. Right.
So
that
really
makes sense.
Cool when you get those. Yeah.
Yes. Jess, Memphis's win over South Florida on Saturday, more impressed by, is one I asked Jeff. He said it was a hard question, so I wanted to bring it back. More impressed by Brendan Lewis, you know, going in there, playing hurt. We know all the factors, but he ends up throwing for 300 yards, makes the, you know, over 300 yards, goes toe-to-toe with Byron Brown. You can argue he outplayed him, hits the big one to Cortez, and doing it against a South Florida defense that's got some dogs, or that Memphis defensive effort that holds that South Florida offense, been averaging 58, 57 points last four games, to just 7 second half. It was punt, punt, miss field goal in the fourth quarter when they needed it most. Which one more impressive to you? Obviously, both very impressive.
I'm taking the crown. I'm breaking it in half. I'm giving one to each. But if I had to pick one, I'm going with Brendan Lewis solely because of the injury piece of it. And him being questionable going into the week. And just how necessary he was and how big he showed up. And I will, when I think of Brendan Lewis for the rest of my life, I will think of him throwing his body out to get that 2-point conversion at the end of that game. And knowing, like, he probably doesn't feel great. I mean, whatever, you got the adrenaline and you go through it. But to be able to put that together on top of some of those throws that he made in the second half of that game, I just thought was a really, really gutty performance from him. And the reason why he is QB1 in Memphis this season. Like, he showed why he is your guy.
Yeah, that was as good as it gets. Jessica, you are as good as it gets. Thank you so much for
the
time,
you,
as always.
Yep.
Yep. She's Jessica Benson, joins us every Tuesday here on the show, Catch Her on Grass City Media Grizz Radio Network. Yeah, we're going to talk about the Memphis exhibition game. We haven't discussed that. It was fun, for really fun for 20 minutes, then not that much fun after that. But still some good, I think, to take out of that. So we'll get into that and more on the other side. J&J, I'm trying to finish.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
ESPN. If you're exiting one home and entering another, make sure you go with my friends at Black Time Moving. 316-6196 is the phone number. They are the best company, moving company in the area, because they're going to show up when they say they're going to show up. They're going to stay on budget. They're going to get a good deal. They are the best in town. I've used them twice. And look, a day may come where I need them again, and I'll be happy to call them. You'll be happy you used them. Let them handle the move for you. The professionals at Black Time Moving. 316-6196 is the phone number. Black Time Moving changed the moving city of Memphis. So the cool thing, and I know I'm raving about this, but it really did stick with me. The cool thing about this is that they come out to this, right? Everybody jumping, you know. They have 2-5 football team. If it was me, I'd be like, man, hell to hell with this football team. But they're all jumping up and down. They can't wait. And eventually, the team comes out, music's still blaring. They cut the music so it goes silent, but the whole crowd still is singing. Sleep with one eye open.
That's crazy.
I mean, and it's like, you get chills kind of when you're in that environment, you know? I mean, we got to get some traditions, man. We got to come with some, you know, the Tiger Run is great, but it don't have the same juice, you know what I mean? Or the run, whatever, they running with the Tigers. You know, we got to.
Yeah, Reverend Ike did a good job. But, I hear what you're saying. It's not, it doesn't mean.
It's probably not a fair comparison.
It's a little bit different. Yeah, it's probably just unfair. They've been doing that for a while.
Virginia Tech is probably like a top 15 job all time. Probably, you know, I don't know. They have a national championship, so they have to be in the mix somewhere. And they want Franklin, by the way. I talked to the fans up there. They want James Franklin. Okay. They don't want Beamer. And I get it. I mean, Beamer is 3-5 right now in South Carolina. I asked, what about Shane Beamer? And one guy said, too much Beamer. We don't want to do that again. I get it. Again, I get it. Because the son is not the dad.
Right.
And so, yeah, why would James Franklin not want that job?
Oh, he wants to work.
Yeah.
That's very clear.
And his problem was winning the big one. It wasn't winning.
Just beating AP-ranked teams.
Yeah. Right. There's no Ohio State in the ACC. I mean, you know, Clemson, not really worried about them. If you get a good roster, you can beat them. You know, Miami, Mario Cristobal, come on, man. Now, I mean, they will be a force to be reckoned with. We'll see what Florida State does. But I think James Franklin, for him, that's a great fit. So we'll see, and it's not that far from where he was at. So we'll see if that ends up happening. But that is exactly who they want. All right, we've gone long enough. Memphis basketball played an exhibition game last night. It was weird. The lights went out after the first 20 minutes, and they did not resume play in the second half. So it was 42-40 Memphis final. You know, I guess maybe they'll have to replay that second half somewhere down the line. But I got to say, no, obviously they did play a second half in Arkansas. I ran out on them. All right? That damn catch and shoot kid, Thomas.
Yeah.
Malik Thomas. Could not get a body on him. All right, everybody fouls out for the Tigers. Although, you know, my focus will be on that first 20 minutes. You know, which I thought was fantastic for Memphis. I had a lot of great, hope and thoughts about that first 20 minutes. And then I kind of just got off to do it because it is an exhibition at the end of the day. And I expected Arkansas, after they kind of come back from down 15, I expected them to kind of, you know, win the game. I didn't know by how much. But also, Jason, we know they went 0-2 in their exhibitions last year. It went on to be a 5 seed. So
didn't shoot the ball well in those exhibitions as well.
Exactly right.
Memphis going a little crazy about that.
That's exactly right. And they went on to be one of the best shooting 3-point teams in the country.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So now, again, will that replicate in 2025? Most likely not.
Saying, you don't draw too many conclusions or go nuts after one preseason.
Well, and to be clear, had they won the game, I would have been coming in here saying they were a championship contender.
Probably.
You know, but it's a free swing in that way. So look, are there concerns? Absolutely. I mean, I think we can sort of work our way down the list. I will start with my favorite thing about last night, which is Doug McDaniel. Mm-hmm. My favorite thing. He is a legitimate, like, you know, going to be the best lead guard in the conference, no doubt about it, type guy. He has control of the offense already. He likes to get guys involved. He can make shots. He made some threes. I'm really excited about Doug McDaniel and this Memphis offense. I mean, Penny has done a good job of keeping a pretty elite lead guard in his time here. And it was last year, it was PJ Haggerty.
you know, 2 years before that, it was Kendrick Davis. And it appears as though he has done it again and with Doug.
And a top 10 scorer each of the last three seasons, if you include David Jones, who was sixth in that, and Doug McDaniel looks like a guy. He had 19 last night. That could be that again for them.
Absolutely.
You know, a 20-point guy, 21-point guy maybe. That's going to be right there. Would be the fourth straight season Penny's had like a top 10 scorer in the country. You said it, lead guard. You know, a guy, a go-to guy.
Yep.
That's what Penny's been used to having. It's, you know, to get him after you wait on P.J. Haggerty.
Yeah.
Because I'm telling you, Doug McDaniel ain't coming to be Tyrese Hunter necessarily. I mean, the guy can average 20, 21 points. And P.J. Haggerty ain't agreeing to it. You know what I'm saying? If you did have him in the fold, oh, you're going to bring Doug in here? I need the ball 70% of the time. Remember that stuff or whatever it was, 90. And so that to get Doug at the stage you did after having to wait on P.J., love what you're saying. Yeah, he looked like that dude last night.
He looked like that dude.
Now, you know, second half, whatever, everybody went cold. But you saw that guy can, even at his size, he can get a shot anytime he wants to.
Absolutely.
That's what reminded me of Kendrick. He can there, get the shot anytime he wants to.
It's impossible not to think about Kendrick.
I know
really
he went to the hole one time, and Trey Richmond's a whole other thing. Trey blocked you know, the big for Memphis, then he's guarding Doug McDaniel.
Yeah, Trey's a beast.
That's a whole other subject. He's from here, though, and you went after him. But, yeah, no, Doug, you know, other than being short, dude, he's dynamic.
That's, I mean, if he was 6'5", he'd be in the league already.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot like Kendrick Davis. Just his ability to get a shot off, he can get to the basket.
Yes.
And he's your lead guy, man. Looks like Penny's got him another one.
More things I was excited about. Sincere Parker, I liked in the beginning of the game, the energy he brought early in the game. He looked like a guy that could, you know, definitely fill that second leading scorer role for you, which you got to have. So, you know, again, will he be able to play, I suppose, is the bigger question there. His court date's coming up. Hopefully it does all get sorted out there one way or another for Memphis basketball. You know, your guy, man, Whitehaven product, Dedford. I mean, I got to tell you, I was probably not talking about him enough, but he looked like he's going to be impossible to keep off the floor with his energy.
Yeah, only played 13 minutes. But he was a guy that when he was out there, man, it felt like he was doing something. He did end up fouling out, didn't he?
Yeah,
but he was all right. Active. There was just a lot of activity. I just liked looking at that for the future.
100%.
Having a guy like him in the program that's going to develop,
yes,
hopefully for, you know, 2-3 years,
absolutely,
is the hope. I would hope so.
Yes.
That's a guy you want. He's going to be a culture setter.
Yep.
So I saw the same thing you did. Didn't really flash in terms of the stats, off the, but the activity level did.
Yes, it
and
did.
Penny needs
and
those.
And he's actually
he
a pretty big kid.
Yeah. He plays big.
Yeah.
He plays big.
So I liked that. I mean, I didn't want to tweet it because these kids haven't even played a game for Memphis yet.
They were only minus two in the time he was out there. You had a lot of minus double digits because of what happened in the second half.
Yes.
I know, again, short time out there, but he was active, man.
My mind went where yours went with not just Thedford, but also Curtis Givens, right? Because if you start talking about two Memphis kids who are coming here with multiple years of eligibility, imagine if there's a world where Penny is able to retain them for 2 years.
That's the hope when you got these two.
Because
when they got them.
That's your best chance is the local kids, you would think, right? Because they have like hometown connections. And so, yes, I didn't want to tweet it because it felt like I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater on this year yet. I mean, I think Memphis will be a tournament team, but it did get like, it could be elite if you can keep Curtis Givens and Thedford as a core. And I know he wants to do that. You know, next year, year after that, even.
Bro, he had zero returning players.
None.
None back from last year.
Yep.
There's only 8-9 teams in the country that are doing that. We've said it. This is hard.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.